Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. Today, we begin with an update. In December 2010, we took a look at press freedom in Ukraine, which had begun to erode significantly after the election of Viktor Yanukovych in February 2010. Paul McCrory joins us again now for an update, taking a look at the media in Ukraine between 2010 and 2014.
All Ukraine was then united around a simple song, but since corruption was the country's biggest single wrong, Yushchenko became the leader in the situation. Timoshenko's speeches made them heroes of the nation. Yanukovych failed to trick them with his dirty plan, and then he was renamed the nation's biggest bogeyman.
In December 2010, Media Network Plus took a look at the rapid decline in press freedom in Ukraine under Viktor Yanukovych. Yanukovych was the anti-hero, the nemesis of the 2004 Orange Revolution, when millions of Ukrainians took to the streets to protest election fraud, rigged results, falsifications, voter intimidation, and other nefarious means used to ensure Yanukovych was installed as president of Ukraine. But the people prevailed and, without any bloodshed, managed to successfully exercise their democratic rights. Yanukovych was defeated by a slim but decisive margin. The new president was Viktor Yushchenko, who famously survived an assassination attempt by dioxin poisoning during the earlier election campaign. His success was due to a coalition of the opposition parties. Which was, unfortunately, short-lived. 6 years later, the Ukrainian people's democratic dreams of the Orange Revolution failed to materialize. Not only did the dream not come true, it turned into a nightmare. It was 2004 all over again. Only this time, on February 14, 2010, Viktor Yanukovych finally and firmly grasped the reins of power that had eluded him in 2004. And in a very short time, just months in fact, press freedoms in Ukraine, which had flourished under his predecessor, saw a rapid and alarming erosion. Viktor Kovalenko, an activist and journalist during the 2004 Orange Revolution, explained this when we spoke with him back in 2010.
That's why now, when Yanukovych and his team gained power, the majority of local journalists were shocked, and me too. Now we are seeing censorship under Yanukovych rule again, and media personnel suddenly realized that freedom of press is too fragile, that the country has a critical lack of truly independent media, journalism is not actually protected, and access to public information is highly restricted. So journalists realized that all was fine in the past 5 years, mainly because of the goodwill of President Yushchenko. After Orange Revolution, Yushchenko stopped any orders, and I can tell you that during his term, he didn't send any orders to journalists about what to do and how to cover his activities. And that's why journalists felt that they can criticize Yushchenko openly, and sometimes they criticized Yushchenko more than enough, because they started criticize him not because of his wrongdoings or statements. He criticized his ideology and tried to play political role more than be watchdogs.
A rather astute observation made by Viktor Kovalenko on Media Network Plus back in December of 2010. And it turned out to be rather prophetic. Fast forward now to 2016 and a recently published paper that puts press freedom in a different light. The paper is titled Usurpation of Power in Ukraine, 2010 to 2014, The Role of the National Media. It was written by Dmytro Potykin and Eugenia Kuznetsova. The position that the paper takes on the issue of press freedom is arguably a more mature one, one which transcends the notion of repression from outside as the main threat, victimization, if you will. What the paper does is identify an internal threat. Dmytro Potykin is a former journalist and broadcaster from the early 2000s and is also an international expert on peaceful civil disobedience movements. Ironically, in August of 2014, on a visit to Donetsk, he was kidnapped by Russian terrorists and detained for 48 days. He was ill-treated, although fortunately not beaten, to which he attributes his skills as a nonviolence expert and perhaps as a broadcast journalist with good storytelling skills. He has since launched a lawsuit against the Kremlin for this violation of his human rights. Although Western governments and media accepted the election outcome and welcomed Yanukovych as Ukraine's duly elected president, Putikhin and other activists called into question the legitimacy of the 2010 elections. The illegal changes that Yanukovych later made to the country's constitution, which increased presidential powers, constituted an actual usurpation of power. Usurpation, in this case the capture of state power by Yanukovych, is one thing. The role of the media, while and after it happened, is another. This paper takes the national media of Ukraine to task for essentially not doing its job to protect the country's fragile grip on democracy. As a former broadcaster himself, Dmytro Putikhin is very disappointed with Ukraine's national media. He spoke with us recently from Ukraine's capital, Kyiv.
If you had a chance to see our study with Evgenia Kuznetsova on the coverage of the usurpation of power by Ukrainian media throughout 2010-2014, you would not be too optimistic. There are some signs of improvements, okay, but I would not say that it is guaranteed, you know, improvement of the quality of media in Ukraine, because we did just study on one issue. It is a very important issue. It is rule of law, and particularly coverage of the issue of state capture, okay,
right,
of usurpation. So we tried to look how Ukrainian media, all of them, TV channels, printed radio stations, even internet media, how they were covering this issue of usurpation of power. And over time, it was changing, but most of the media were covering usurpation not as a fact, but either as something non-existent, so they were actually helping to keep usurpation going, or they were questioning this problem. So, in a way, Ukrainian media throughout the years of Yanukovych in power, they were actually helping him to keep power.
Now, how could that be? Most journalists, whether in fledgling democracies like Ukraine or even established democracies in the West, tend to consider themselves as defenders of democracy through their profession. Yet, for the most part, the media in Ukraine from 2010 to 2014 stepped on the slippery slope that many Western journalists find themselves on. Rather than ask the tough questions, they take the easy way out. Granted, this can become a problem in more established democracies too. Laziness and sloppy reporting can turn away audiences and lead to increased government and corporate control of the media through consolidation of corporate assets or just government bailouts. A creeping problem, to be sure, but one that can be more easily reversed than in a country with a tenuous grip on democracy. In a place like Ukraine, government and corporate control, or more accurately, oligarch control, is a reality. It's the norm. Between 2010 and 2014, Ukraine's national media seemed willing to forget that.
What would you expect from independent media in any developed democracy in such a case? You would expect calling for explanation from the administration. You would expect some legal experts to comment on the issue, and you would expect independent journalists and experts and civic activists and diplomats, everybody asking whether the situation in the country is legitimate, whether the constitution is legitimate, and whether the guys in the offices, they're actually legitimate leaders of the country. But what we got in Ukraine was just a report that there was such a change, okay? Next wave of reports were about comments and opinion from the Venice Commission, which actually also questioned this way of change of the constitution. saying that such a way of setting constitutional framework in Ukraine in a country is lacking legitimacy, which means that actually there are no reasons to believe that the guys who are running country are legitimate leaders, because if you do not have legitimate constitution with a clearly set constitutional rights and obligations from different parts of the authorities, if you can't see where is the clear separation of powers, then you cannot claim that there is a constitutional order in Ukraine. You can't define who can do what in the administration, which means that actually guys in the offices on Bankova and other in the ministries, they do not have rights to give orders, okay? Which means that there is whole situation of unconstitutionality of the situation in the country. And in Ukraine, we had just some discussion of that, but then almost everybody forgot about that. And everybody, even those criticizing Yanukovych for being corrupt and other wrongdoings, they were still addressing him as president, not as an usurper or dictator somebody who is acting as if he is president. But everyone was just keeping that game going on and providing him with legitimacy in this way. And why it is important? Because when you expect people to win nonviolently in a protest against a dictator, you would like to have the security services switching the sides and not killing and beating people, but actually protecting rule of law. Okay? And if they don't know, if they were given time to forget about illegitimacy of the whole situation, they would just don't know that they are receiving orders from illegitimate rulers. Okay? And it is in the laws that, you cannot implement illegitimate orders. And if your bosses, they are illegitimate, if they are usurpers, if their rights and authority is not clearly set, then how can you follow their orders? And all that story was just forgotten. So when the Euromaidan faced, as well as all the previous protests, by the way, but when Euromaidan faced the situation, and they also forgot about the story, and even the civil society in Ukraine demanding resignation of Azarov and Yanukovych, they were actually believing them to be legitimate rulers. They were calling for resignation of the officials, Azarov, and they were having negotiations with Yanukovych as the president of Ukraine. And that increased the room for violence in Ukraine in 2013-14. And contrary to 2004, by the way, when everyone had a very clear idea that the elections were falsified, so Yanukovych was a falsifier, so actually nobody, lots of people did not want to follow his orders and orders of the administration. So the security forces, the police, riot police, they started switching the sides even before violence started, contrary to 2014. And the Euromaidan
force. The question of the media's reluctance to challenge the authorities between 2010 and 2014 is a mystery even to someone with broadcast experience, activist experience, and experience as a Ukrainian citizen like Dmytro Potykin. When asked why he thought that the media was reluctant to challenge the authorities between the years of 2010 and 2014, he had this to say.
I would arrange another study. By the way, why nobody asked the question we asked in our study? Why not only democracy promotion, but why no research fund or NGO or think tank or university, either in Ukraine or outside in the world, looked at this issue? had to fund this study of the media occupation in Ukraine ourselves. We all found ourselves inside that story, and that was too late. And when Yanukovych regime passed all those dictatorial laws against the freedom of speech in 2013, it was already too late, you know, because these were no laws anymore, because the parliament was controlled. Actually, it was not the parliament anymore. Again, if you have a reservation and if you do not have legitimate constitution, then you can't even claim that you have a legitimate parliament in the country. They kept playing this game.
Surprisingly, and fortunately, press freedoms in Ukraine did not erode as significantly as feared under the rule of Viktor Yanukovych between 2010 and 2014. Freedom House rankings hovered between 126 and 129 between 2010 and 2015, and rose to 107 in the 2016 World Press Freedom Index, an increase of 22%. While press freedom, as we've seen, does not necessarily empower the media, it does provide an opportunity for journalists to influence both the political process and the development of civil society. Since 2014, there has been disappointment with the new government in Kyiv, but not so much with the electoral process. Nor is there any question of the legitimacy of the current president. The war in Ukraine today, which was sparked by the ouster of Viktor Yanukovych, may well have served to drive home the importance of the role of the media in the development of democracy in Ukraine. Democracy is messy and a work in progress, but it seems Ukraine's media is developing a deeper understanding of the obligations as well as the rights of freedom of the press. I'm Paulette McQuarrie for Media Network Plus.
We now move to a program that appeared on the shortwave dial about a year ago. It's called The Classic Experience with Paul Walker. Now, it's not a weekly program or a daily program. It's something that appears every so often and is a special two-hour program produced by Paul Walker himself, featuring music. Yes, something very unusual to hear, especially on shortwave in the United States. Well, I wanted to find out a little bit more about it, so I called him up at his home in Alaska. Where in Alaska exactly? Well, let him tell you.
It's Galena. We are about 300 miles west of Fairbanks.
Okay, now let me quickly ask you, tell me a little bit, what is the program about if somebody hadn't heard it before?
It's literally about music. You know, I've been listening to shortwave for 2 or 3 years, and one of the complaints, however true or indicative of what shortwave is today, that one of the complaints that I hear is that people say that shortwave is just full of religion and politics. And I was just sitting around one day and says, I want to do something a little different and give people something they can, you know, actually enjoy.
So for music, what kind of music do you mainly focus on during the program?
Generally, late 50s to late 70s rock and roll, anything from the Big Bopper on into the disco era. I will play 80s and 90s classic rock and adult contemporary if it fits the sound, if it kind of fits that happy, upbeat type of sound.
Right. And so far, how many programs have you done?
I have done, I believe at this point, I have done 3 or 4. I forget which.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do, for example, what some others do, and that's add text or even transmit pictures?
I did that for the first time during the last broadcast. I just wanted to experiment, and I did do it. We had a few problems with the picture, but the text worked fantastically.
And what kind of response have you been getting from the program?
the first response was pretty fantastic. Second time I did it, not so great because I've been a little lax in sending out QSL cards.
Right. Well, I mean, that's something I think that a lot of people can be guilty of. Now, you have another program.
Well, yeah.
Now, you have another program coming up. I should mention that the program itself is 2 hours, and that's going to be on the 26th and 27th of August. We'll give out the times and frequencies in a little moment. What can we expect on that program?
More of the same that I've been doing, rock and roll and stuff like that. And the one thing the couple things I promise with the show, and I beg anyone to prove any different. There's no asking for donations. There's no seeking of sponsors. There's no commercials. There's no rants of a political, religious, or any other kind of nature. It is literally just about the music, and that's all you're going to hear.
Paul, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Keith.
Paul Walker from the Classic Experience with Paul Walker. And his next transmission is coming up on the 26th and 27th of August. And here are the times and frequencies. 6070, August 26th to Europe from 22 to 24 hours UTC. To Eastern North America from 21 to 23 hours UTC on 11580 kilohertz. Now for the transmissions on August the 27th. To South America, 2 to 4 hours UTC on 11530 kHz. 3:30 to 5:30 UTC on 9265 kHz, and that's for coverage partially in the United States. 7570 kHz from 4 to 6 hours UTC for North America. And finally, 15195 kilohertz from 12 to 14 hours UTC. Now, if you didn't have time to write any of that down, don't worry. We will be posting it on the Facebook page for PCJ Radio International. And I can assure you that Paul this time will be looking forward to getting some reception reports. He said he made a little bit of a change in that he will be responding to reception reports using EQSL. He said he was a little bit lax. I know the feeling. I know that's happened exactly to myself. And it is easier to use an EQSL than a printed one. But anyway, do check it out. If you can, let us know. If you got the QSLs, and I'll get on the poll and I'll say you didn't send them out. But anyway, you are listening to Media Network Plus coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Calorie 105, it is speed 222 journals.
Speed 220, calorie 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Well, it's now time on the program for propagation. What's been happening and what we can expect? Here's our propagation editor and host of World of Radio, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through August 13th. Normal at low and middle latitudes, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through August 13th, magnetic conditions unsettled except quiet on the 13th. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, the forecast through August 14th, a slight 10% chance of M-class solar flares. From FK Yanda in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled on August 12th, 15th, 18th, 24th, 31st. quiet on August 13th, 14th, 23rd, 27th, and 28th. Active to disturbed August 16th, 17th, 21st, 29th. Quiet to active on August 20th, 25th, 26th, and 30th. Mostly quiet on August 22nd. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field activity expected to be at unsettled to active levels August 15th and 16th, with ANK indices of 12 and 4. August 24th and 25th at 15 and 4. Unsettled to G1 minor storm levels on August 31st, peaking at 25 and 5 on August 30th. Solar flux dropping from 100 on August 13th to 75 on the 21st to 26th, and back up to 95 by September 3rd. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF, microwave DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting across the western Gulf of Mexico on August 12th and 13th, off Southern California and Baja California, August 12th to 16th. All week off the northwest coast of Africa into the mid-Atlantic, the eastern Mediterranean until August 14th, along the coast of Angola, August 15th and 16th, and all week around the Red Sea, Caspian Sea, Persian Gulf, Arabian Sea to Pakistan and India.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. Now, before we go, I just want to remind you again about the special program that we have coming up next week on the 21st and 22nd of August. It's called From the Radio Netherlands Archives. Now, you may remember in July we did the first two-hour program. The second one is coming up next week. The times and frequencies are, and these are all in UTC, August 21st to Europe from 6 to 8 hours UTC on 7780 kHz. Then to North America, August 22nd, from 1 to 3 hours UTC on 7570 kHz. And we had a pretty good response from the first one that we did. And people are asking, are we going to also be issuing a special QSL for this one? Yes, and it will be different than the first one that we issued. So do tune in, get the details, send it to us, and you'll get it as well. All right. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Let us know how you heard the program by whatever means. It helps us. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. 73 and 88 to the ladies.